Happy birthday to ya.
Come on.
Happy birthday to ya. Happy birthday.
Come on, Stevie. Come on. Thank you. Oh, you hired Stevie?
I hired Welcome back to Good Moms, Bad Choices.
I'm Erica.
And I'm Mila.
Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday. Welcome back to Make Your Own Magic October.
October's my favorite month. And guess what, you guys? It's my birthday.
It's a very special day. It's my wife's birthday.
I'm 27.
She's 27. Wow.
I feel like 27 was a good year for me. I don't know why. Wait. Oh, yeah. It was the year I gave birth. It's a very transitional year, and I feel like I'm in a transitional year in my life. So we're going back to the 27s.
Okay, well, I'm with it.
If you Google me, you'll find out how old I am, but don't do that shit.
If you're 27, I'm 26. I'm with it.
That's true.
Exactly how old I feel. How do you feel today?
Like I said, I feel like I'm in a transitional year. I feel good. I feel like this year has been very challenging for me. I've had a lot of deep shadow work I've been going through and working through, and things I thought that I had already dealt with have resurfaced. And so I'm kind of in the midst of journeying through that path. Excited to do the work. And like, honestly, I'm even more grateful too, because part of the work is with my dad, and my dad is really on board with participating in that part of the work that I need to do with him. Actually, next week, me and him have a solo trip planned for the weekend, and I'm fucking nervous as hell. I'm trying not to have expectations, which is really hard, which is the whole thing I'm trying to undo with men. But I'm open. I'm open. I'm happy. And I'm grateful to be alive and have been doing this thing here for 5.5 years.
The whole 30s.
Oh my God. Has it been all of my 30s?
Whole 30s.
I guess I just told everyone how old I am.
Shit. The whole 20s.
Fuck. My whole 25, 4.5s.
Yeah. I'm excited for you. And I think sometimes as we're like going into new ages and new stages of our lives, like for instance, when we were like going into your 30s, people tell you all the time, like 30s are going to be different. It's going to be so different. And like, just like what, motherhood's so crazy, but you don't really fully understand or grasp that until you do it. So I think after you go through those very pivotal moments, when you are going through something that's transitional, like you are right now, that like it brings a little bit more ease, because you're like, oh, I've done some transitional shit before, and at the other side, there's this grand thing. But, you know, when you get to that part, when you're like, something's not right here, and I have to do some work, it can be difficult. So I'm proud of you, and I'm excited for this year and these changes and that you're embracing them, and I'm excited for your journey with your dad and your trip. I think a lot of people don't get the opportunity to identify when they're having parts of their lives that they're stuck in, and then even go even deeper to be like, well, this is related to this person, and this person is still here, so let's deal with it. And I realized, like, I was just thinking this yesterday. I'm like, this crazy thought came, and I'm like, am I close to my parents, or are they my parents? And so there's an assumption of closeness, you know, like when you grow up in the household with someone or not, you know, you're like, you see them every day, so it feels close. But as we become adults and we go off into the world, and then we go, you know, the whole thing is like, you have kids, you make your own family, you get married. And then you're like, but like, do I talk to these people on a day-to-day basis like I do my homegirls or my friends? And it kind of scared me, you know, because it's like none of us are going to be here permanently. And so what does that look like if, you know, like, this idea that there's closeness, but then the reality that maybe it doesn't exist like we think it is. And you know how abrupt the ending of that can be if you're not really working on the relationships actively. So like, I'm excited to see, you know, how that plays out for you, and like your feedback.
I feel very fortunate that I have a parent that wants to do that, because I know that there's a difference between having a parent that's alive that you want to work through some shit with, and they're not get and participate, or they won't even acknowledge anything, versus a parent that is like, what do you need? How can I how can I help this? How can I help serve you in this way? Or how can I help heal this thing, this damage that I've done?
It also makes me wonder for me as a mom and as a parent, and I think about how I am with my parents right now, and I'm like, what the fuck? Like, if Luna grows up and is 35 and I'm like speaking to her once a week, I'll be like, what the fuck? You know what I mean? And like how sad that can be for a parent. You know, I think parents are probably more aware of it because they're the parent, whereas we're like at the peak of our lives, just like, I got to work and I got to figure it out. Where parents are like probably realizing that not that it's coming to an end, but you are getting older. So the mortality of that is more present. And so it's like, you know, probably, you know, just like parents feel sadness when your kid goes off to college or gets married, there's this level of losing them or losing that relationship. And, I don't know. It's kind of, it scares me a little bit, you know? So it is exciting that your dad's willing to do that. And it makes me wonder, like, do I need to, it reminds me of Durand asking us this question that we intentionally swept over when he was like, would you be friends with your parents if they weren't your parents? And I was like, ooh, dog, relax with these questions. But, you know, it's like, yes, they're your parents, but is there a level of friendship that you have there? And are you working to maintain that, or, you know, even discover if it doesn't exist? So I think your dad's cool, and I think he's cool, like, for being open to doing it, and he's aware of, like, what, you know, the relationship you guys have had. So I think that's, like, super, super inspiring.
That is a deep question. I want, if you're listening, ask yourself that question, because I'm sitting here thinking, like, I know, yes, I would be friends with my parents now.
Right.
If you asked me like 5 years ago, I don't think so. I don't know. Yeah. Definitely didn't. I don't know. Sorry. Sorry, Mom.
But those are questions we don't generally ask ourselves. Yeah. So it's nice to, yeah. It's nice when people pose those questions so you can have the opportunity to reflect on it, because a lot of people will just bypass those things and then you'll have regret, you know, and it's like, might as well deal with the things that come up in real time so that you're not dealing with it when it's too late.
True. Facts. Well, we have another parent here in the building. We have one of my dear friends and someone that I just admire so much. She is a master wellness educator. She is also the host of Deeply Well podcast. She's a mama to a cutie pie little boy. Devi Brown, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here with you both.
I'm so happy to have you. Would you be friends with your parents?
Yes. And, you know, I was really relating. First of all, that was beautiful, that whole exchange around, because my God, is that complex. I think at the place that I am at now at this age with my mom, and just especially seeing her be such a phenomenal grandmother to my son, like, absolutely. She's a really amazing friend.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's a journey. I think for women too, the relationship with the mom is always a little bit complicated. It's a little murky. And obviously there's so many layers to that. I think because of the time in which our parents grew up in, the pressure to be perfect wives or perfect mothers, or and not having the tools also to self-regulate and really know how to support their child. Because I think a lot of times too, society paints this version of motherhood as like, you give birth to your mini me, and it's not that, like, and then you're disappointed kind of, or you're frustrated. Like, why are you acting this way? This is not what I would do, or this is not how I would behave. And so then there's that resistance, at least for me with my mother, like, we are very different people, similar in ways, but different people. And I always felt like there was this like miscommunication of like, this is who I am and I'm not going to be that. And it became like this tug of war. And I feel like over the last few years, like, there's kind of, honestly, I think it's Good Moms really that really helped heal our relationship, because I had to stand 10 toes down in what I was doing. And because I love it so much and I'm so passionate about it, and she didn't understand it, and it caused a lot of turmoil at first in our relationship. And then I said, no, this is what I'm doing. And then obviously now she's seen the growth and, you know, the journey. And there's like a level of like I think she respects me as an adult, finally. I mean, I'll always be her baby. But that has also, I think, softened her to who I was as a younger child, and really understanding, like, the rebellion that I was going through in ways of, like, this is how I want to dress. This is how I am. Like, I'm not weird about nakedness just because you are. Even though, like, my mom was butt-ass naked in my house every single day. That's why I would always be so confused. I'm like, Mom, you're, like, the most naked person I know. Why are you acting
like growing up?
Yeah! Mm-hmm. She would be just butt naked all over the place. Like, Erica and I would be... sometimes I would be uncomfortable. I'd be like, Mom, can you just, like, put some underwear on? Like, God damn.
She was like, this is my house. My house.
Shit. Like, whoa, I can see where I was birthed.
The portal is clear.
The portal is shining. But I think that there's a level of understanding and softness that has... I've seen her adopt in the way she communicates with me. Like, I've seen, I don't even know if it was intentional, but it's probably something I need to acknowledge and tell her, because even more recently, the way she talks to me on the phone, like, hi, honey, how are you? Like, she's very like, hey, how you doing? Whereas before, I always felt like, oh God, I'm in trouble. Like, what did I not do? What, you know? So, yeah, there's definitely been a growth there. So now I definitely would be friends with my mom.
It's so interesting. Like, I'm hearing you talk. I'm just like thinking about us as a unit. And I'm just thinking, like, you know, our parents did come from a different time and they were experiencing different shit. And like, we, not surpassing our parents, but spiritually and emotionally, absolutely. And I don't know, like, I actually want to know, like, what your background is and you're like, how your spiritual upbringing was. But in my household, there really wasn't a lot, you know, like, it wasn't like, we weren't very religious. In fact, like, my dad told me, like, Jesus was just like some white man that all the white people told us to believe in, and then everyone believed him, and like, you know, people are dumb, basically. And like, so I wasn't forced into any religion, but I've always been like attracted to like spirituality and the mystics. But I realized that there is this like emotional intelligence that we kind of been birthed into, and I'm sure it's partially the internet, and I'm thinking it's partially just like the way the world is going, that it requires us to be a little bit more attuned. And I think that this generation right here has been given this like extreme blessing / responsibility to heal the generations before us. And I see it, like, I feel it, and I see it in my kid, and I see it when I look at my mom. And you know, I've seen her grow in ways, and same, like, shift to what I'm doing and be like, okay, like, okay, I get it now. But like, it's always been a lot of this, and I'm a lot of person, so I get it. And I'm very rebellious, and I'm very 10 toes down in who I am. But even to the, like, even when I was talking to my dad, and he was like, you know, back in the day, like, my parents really didn't tell us we love them. And I asked them about that, and it's because their parents didn't tell them they loved them. And there was this like disconnect of emotional vulnerability. And I mean, I think as brown and black people too, when you have a lot of shit to worry about, like survival, there's not a lot of time for like the woo-woo shit. And so it's like, get the work done, work hard, do this, don't fuck around. So I think when they see us and we're like, oh, I'm naked, I'm doing this, they're like, what? Like, they don't, there's a level of misunderstanding. But I think it's also shifting generations of like trauma for us, you know? And like, I think it's an interesting thing to watch us being ourselves and then watching our parents kind of like us be the parent and them kind of come out of you know, like, out of their just like that very stubborn place where they were. And like, I was just thinking about all the tools that we utilize, like the tarot cards and the readings, because I know I've been to your reader through Erica, and I had like
constellation.
I had a family constellation done, and even for me, I'm like, this is crazy weird. This is so weird, but I'm still open to it. And I'm like, then I'm like an hour into it, I'm fucking bawling, crying, standing on pieces of paper. But I mean, I just imagine for like our parents, these were things that they would never be open to, and they'd also be like, what the fuck, you know what I mean? But us being open to certain like levels of spiritual medicine has really like, it's going to change the paradigm for our kids, and just being open to that type of stuff. And I'm just like, wondering, what was the background growing up with your mom and your family, and like, did she encourage it, or was it like forbidden, or what did that look like?
Yeah. Well, first, I would love to speak to everything that you just said, because, I mean, it was just so beautifully unpacked and just so deeply true. And some of what you're saying, it's interesting because I think back, you know, when you come into enlightenment, especially if you are a breaker of generational trauma in your family line, or especially if you are an awakener, a way shower, which so many of us are in this generation, I think you go through stages with how you relate to your family system. And of course, this is dependent on our individual experiences. And some people have a lot of truly unforgivable big T trauma that happens with their families. So I'm not quite speaking to that. But you go through this phase where, you know, it's like at first you're just high on your own shit because you just think you're so great because you're figuring stuff out and you're breaking these curses and you're doing things differently and you're having these awarenesses. And then there's a lot of anger that happens towards your family of origin, and sometimes a lot of shaming of them and a lot of a deep desire to disassociate and disconnect. And then hopefully the farther we get on our journey and the more we soften, there comes a lot of humility. Like in the last few years, I've come into an immense amount of humility in the way that I was walking around with my awakening and kind of allowing it to make me feel sometimes better than or above, you know. I'm just, oh, I'm so, and I know, and I see how the world works and I understand. Because to the point of what you said, yeah, none of this existed for them. You know, it's like we're only a handful of decades removed of women having the right to have bank accounts, of women having universally around the country, like the right to work without permission. And I think something I also have really been fascinated by that I'm studying is like, I love to study generations, like dating back 100 years, like what were people going through in whatever times it was. And I think we are always at the mercy, no matter how pure your heart is, no matter how good your intention, we are always at the mercy of the collective consciousness of the time, which means billions of people, you know, like it influences everything. But I think, you know, as we kind of process our stuff, and for those that are looking to reconnect with their families, you know, I think the thing that we hear a lot is like, you know, they didn't get that either, and have compassion. Yes. And have a deep gratitude that you were born in a time that you could connect to this work with so much ease. Granted, no matter what, doing the work is hard, but the fact that you can open up Instagram and read an infographic that explains something that took somebody maybe 10 years of therapy to understand. And not only are you understanding it, we're blessed with the fact that the collective now is having new language, is understanding these things. You can slide into conversations like this in a way you never could, you know? So as much as we feel really proud of the work that we're doing, and we should, there also has to be humility with it, because it's not that we're better than the generations that came before us. We just have a completely different set of circumstances and opportunity and space to do this work.
I'm thinking about the collective, like you're talking about the collective, and I'm thinking about in this time, yes, there is the luxury, right, that we have these things at our fingertips. I have, what'd you call it, an infographic that yeah. can break down something super quickly that maybe someone took 10 years to figure out. There's also kind of like a privilege in that as well, that I can just kind of like, okay, got it, swipe, next. Oh, that was cute. Oh, you took you 10 years, cool. Like, how do you view that? Like, is it dangerous or is it helpful? Like, how would you describe the collective right now?
I think everything is always both. You know, like I think in every field that we're in and every paradigm that shifts, like you always have awful, mediocre, good, excellent, you know? And I think that's the same thing for this time. And in some ways it is dangerous because a lot of people who don't do the work are getting equipped with language they don't apply or understand. And a lot of people are just memorizing books and memorizing terms and regurgitating. But to actually change oneself, it's a slow process. It takes years. It's not a weekend of vision boarding. That can motivate you, but that deeper inspiration that actually allows you to embody new ways of being and change your life it's a very slow, beautiful unfolding, and it requires a lot of patience, and it requires a lot of revisiting. You know, something you said earlier, it's like, I thought I healed this. And you did. You healed what you had access to at the time. And because of that work, now there's a little more. Mm-hmm. Now there's the opportunity to see it from a different lens, to apply that same healing to other areas of your life, you know? And so I think that's, and maybe this isn't the perfect word for this, but it's the one that keeps coming through. It's like, be in humility with your process. That is what will really guide you and push you forward for the rest of your life. Allow yourself to be in dignity with your process. Be in integrity with your process. It's not about who's more healed and how much we know than the other person, or how many, well, I did ayahuasca this many times, so that means this, or I did da-da-da-da-da. It's like, cool, cool, cool. And we all have our stuff from this lifetime and all the others. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, it's not a race to enlightenment or consciousness. And I think very often people, especially once they get connected to certain language, it's just so easy to get high on your own supply. It is so easy to be feeling yourself and holding yourself as above. And, you know, I'm always of the belief, no matter where I am in my wisdom and my knowledge and my process, I'm above nor beneath anyone ever. I'm just dancing with my unique karma and my unique spiritual curriculum. And actually, to answer your question that you had to start, I didn't come from a spiritual home. I think my mom was having her own reckoning with God. And so God was not at all present in my house, but I always longed for God. Like, I remember being a child and being fascinated by church and being very fascinated by Christ, but it kind of was very adjacent to my experience. I'm an only child raised by a single parent, and I was a latchkey kid. So it's like all of those layers kind of experience in childhood, I was always curious about God. I always felt God, but I didn't have any systems or language around it or anyone to talk to about it. So my dance with the divine has always been about me seeking it out and then applying and growing in that kind of as my own personal relationship.
At what point did you begin to seek it out? Was it during that time, or was
very
it later
young.
In life?
Yeah, I think I came into an awareness that I was a very highly intuitive child really young. And I think that was noticed by adults around me and also probably really disliked. You know, I was always very, very, very aware of patterns of decisions and choices adults were making. I was always kind of observing and evaluating. My mom used to call me like, you were a deep feeler, you know, and I'm like, to say it lightly.
That's what my mom says to me.
Right. I'm like, to say it lightly, there's a lot going on in this thing. But, but yeah, I think I was always intuitive. So I was connected to the mystery of being here on Earth and like to kind of those unseen energetics and forces that you feel. And then I just kind of, I've always been, since I was a kid, this sounds like kind of ridiculous. Like, I wasn't Doogie Howser or anything, but like, I was always like, I read at like a ninth grade level, like I think in first grade or second grade or something. Like,
what?
I had like, I know.
You were Doogie Howser.
I had like a terrible at math and science, but always really connected to like language and reading and history and fascinated by it forever. And so I would just kind of start, there was no internet back in my day, but I would just kind of leaf through books. And I think growing up in LA, and I had a very contrasting way that I grew up, like I experienced like a lot of extremes in lifestyles, and in cultures. I think I feel really grateful to have been born in LA and raised in the way that I was, because it allowed me to see the way that other people were connecting to God so much, other cultures, other backgrounds, other households. It's like, you know, there were meditation studios, you know, if like you went to Santa Monica, there were yoga studios, there were things that were always like seeding my consciousness of like, I don't quite know what that is, but damn, I feel a pull to it. At some point I'll investigate, you know, and then it all started making sense.
Mm. So you kind of just started to pull the things. Yeah. That, yeah. Because like, I don't know if you identify as a Christian or a Catholic, mm-hmm. or you just kind of identify as what, a spiritualist or someone who...
I respect so much about religion. I'm very drawn, especially to like Catholicism. I believe that Christ is the most masterful teacher that has walked the planet. But in no way would I say that I kind of adhere to any dogma or any like particular belief. Like I believe in my relationship with the divine. I believe in goodness. I believe in integrity. I believe in trying to make doing what's right because it's right and making aligned choices. But I wouldn't say that I believe in like that any one system of worship is better than any other. It's how do you know God? And are you sure that you're aligned with God, or are you aligned with the middleman connecting you to God? I think that's something really important to look at.
Mm. The middleman, meaning like the one who's delivering the message, or.
Yeah. Mm. 'Cause you know, it's like we hear so many stories. You have your just mind-blowing prophets. Like one that I respect so deeply is T.D. Jakes, you know, his daughter, Sarah Jakes. Like you have really anointed, beautiful, powerful conduits of the divine, vessels of the divine. And then you also hear all the stories about, you know, the cults and the predators in churches. And, you know, again, it's like everything, whether we're talking about wellness, whether we're talking about religion, whether we're talking about the medical industry or the, you know, I don't know, the motor industry, I don't know. There's always a spectrum of the way that you experience it. There is terrible, mediocre, good, excellent. Mm-hmm. So it's always like evaluating, like, is this the best? Is this the most connected? Is this the most aligned? And like, yeah, just really being present with yourself and holding whatever systems you put yourself in to a higher ideal.
I think about like gurus, right? Because people like, you know, they, some people live and die by their guru or their, did you ever in your journey, and obviously it's continuous, did you have any moments in which like you felt like maybe you were adhering to that middleman and that you had to kind of like break free and have sovereignty over like what your belief systems are, and if so, like what was that moment like?
What an important question. For my personal journey, I would say no, and I think that's because, you know, the nature of being an only child, especially with a single parent and a latchkey kid, you're hyper independent. So I've been hyper independent my whole life. Like one of the things that always comes up in my astrology chart is like, you will never be able to get Devi to do anything that she doesn't want to do. Like my body just won't move. And I've always been like that since a child. So like, for me, I think it's also been like, I've never had any true mentors at any point in my life. It was always about, okay, I need to figure this out. And so because of that, I developed, I think, a lot of self-trust really young. Even if I was, you know, I'm deeply flawed and I 1,000,000% have not always and still do not make the best choices all the time. But I've always known that like I'm sovereign and I'm my own being and I'm taking myself where I need to go.
Mm-hmm. Is that something you saw your mom like exemplify and so you adopted that, or is just something that's like in you solely in your DNA?
I think definitely a little of both. You know, I think my mom is an incredibly strong woman and an incredibly creative woman. And I've always seen her be resilient beyond belief. So there's definitely, you know, this kind of like tolerance to endure, this ability to push through that I absolutely got from her. And I think part of my unique destiny is that I've always been meant to be a little bit of an outlier, a little bit of an observer of things that are going on. Again, not above nor beneath, but just, I've never been an organizational person. I'm not a big groups person. I can have fun in groups. I'm a super extrovert, which sometimes people are surprised to know, but yeah, I've always just felt really good about doing my own thing and trusting that whatever I feel called to do, I can do it.
Has that been challenging for you, like, A, growing in your spirituality and in this space, but then, like, dating and, like
girl. I'm
sure, has that been intimidating for men, or, like, it's been, you know, or because you are kind of an outlier, like, once you do find someone that you, like, click with, do you feel like you get, like, much closer to them much quicker? Like, and how have you protected yourself in that way, you know, because you are an empath and, like, you know, notoriously women, our weakness is those men. And that can come in a lot of different forms. And we've talked about this a lot this month about just, like, when you're in a special, when I think we all have our own, you know, life's purpose and, like, you know, leading in ways and changing, shifting things in ways. But a lot of times there will be tests, you know, you'll be tested in order to, like, take on these roles and lead people. And, like, how have you dealt with those challenges in dating?
Oof. Well,
sounds like she's still, are you still processing?
Still processing. You know, I'll say in no way am I an expert in love. Love is still something that I am really actively learning about in so many ways. I was married for almost a decade and I got divorced, I think maybe 3 years ago now, 3.5 years. And in the last 3 years, which I took, like, the first year was in the pandemic, and I was like, I'm not dating these men that are feeling emotions for the first time. I am not about to take this on and clean this up. I will focus on my child. I will focus on myself. But then kind of as I, you know, pop out and emerge to date or, you know, connect with people, right now I'm just in a place of curiosity with it. You know, like, I'm someone that is not looking to be married. And something I had to really kind of look back and remember is that since childhood, I never actually wanted to get married. But I do believe in committed partnership. And I do believe in, you know, having, I believe in the beauty of long-term companionship. But I'm just exploring. I'm being curious and I'm trying to do it all from the lens of being a sovereign woman and also a woman that understands that people can't, don't know how, and won't show up perfectly. And so how can I relate to that? And how can I keep the observation on me and my needs and what I'm choosing and not be so much projected on another person's behavior?
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, because you've done a lot of work and you are highly intuitive, I would say, and I feel this way as well, too. I mean, I'm still on my journey, too, and my intuition is, when it comes to love, my intuition is fucked up, okay? Mm. Period. Like, it's usually on spot on, and then at some point, either sex confuses me or... Well, that's why I'm really going deeper with this relationship with my father, because there's a confusion that's happening there for me that's unresolved, that gets really messy and cloudy for me as it pertains to, like, masculine energy.
God, I mean, just to sit there for a second, that is so real for all of us in such a multitude of ways. Mm-hmm. Like, even things that we say as, like, a joke, like, One of my homies and I, we always say, like, Dolores Tucker was right this whole time.
Who the fuck is Dolores Tucker?
Do you remember, like, when rap was really taking over in NWA, she was, I believe, a congresswoman or an assemblywoman, and she was trying to get censorship and banning on the music. Mm. But the misogyny always has the best beats. Mm. Like, the music was like fire, you know? So everybody was fighting against it. But let's really think about the effects of growing up as young women and hearing some of the music that we heard and that shaping our understanding of sex, shaping, especially if, as many, many people, it's a very rare experience to come from a fully, quote unquote, healthy home. You know, we're picking up ways of being from everything around us. So it's like, it's plowing through the individual curriculum you have with your father and what you both decided you'd work through together this lifetime. And every man we dated up until this point of our lives and everything that influenced us, the shows, the, you know, the music, the conversations that were happening around us, like, we absorbed all of it and took it on
as collective.
The collective. And we took it on as belief about ourselves, about our worth. And so it's like we, and that's why we have to take shame out of everything in the way that we work with things. We have to bring gentleness for ourselves and acceptance, because there's so much that we didn't even give consent for that shaped our reality. You know, it's like this very slow, slow unlearning and dismantling, and then like pulling in our own truth that we come to.
Mm-hmm. Before we started recording, you touched on a term that I've heard before, but I don't, I'd like to hear what your definition of it is. And it's sacred rage, because rage is something that I have been battling with for the last, I'd say, 6 months. And there's been parts of my rage that have come up where I'm like, whoa, I didn't know I could like get that mad, or I didn't know I could get this angry, or I could feel like, and I don't know if this is sacred. This might just be toxic rage. Where I literally, like, I don't really give a fuck about who, how it affects anyone else.
Yeah.
I'm upset and everyone is going to feel this rage. Like, that's, and it's like overtaking me, and not like, I think because I've tried to bottle it up so much and not speak it, thinking like, okay, I'm tripping, I'm gonna let it go. And it's like, bitch, you did not let it go. And now it's just, you know? So I'm just curious, like, what is your, what is sacred rage? Can you explain that to us?
God, yeah. Oh, I mean, just how many of us relate to what you're saying, you know? It's like, and again, it's like part of those containers that we're forced into as women, especially, you know, in this country, wherever you're from, of the way you're meant to respond to pain, the way that you're meant to, you know, that you should be responding to things that hurt. Sacred rage, in the way that I experience it, it's a little bit more intentional than just rage. Like what I was hearing in some of what you described of like, you know, it's like, and I don't care what happens. And it, that's when we get to the point that's a little bit outside of and above that.
It's no longer sacred.
Yeah. No longer sacred, no longer safe. And so we have to kind of let that calm and hopefully come to a place of neutrality to work with it. But sacred rage is when you come into a space of saying that, like, you deserve to be pissed. Like, you have a right to be pissed. You have a right to feel your feelings. How often do we get pushed into these roles of something is done to you, and then you also have to find the solution for it? Something, you have a, you have an experience with someone, and then you're also in charge
literally
of bringing everyone into peace.
Story of my life.
You know, it's like, yes. All, like, so many of us, we are taught to bypass instantaneously, take ownership of, and then be the parent of the situation, whatever that situation is. And, you know, a lot of that definitely starts in childhood, having suppressed emotions, you know, not being able to feel, not being able to have what, as a child, your body is designed to do, which is have a tantrum. You know, it's like as soon as even parents try to cut off the flow of a tantrum, if it's not hurting anyone, you're teaching your child to suppress. And then they're building the muscle memory for that. And we don't see how much it affects us going into adulthood. But when you just kind of metabolize the process of suppression, you may have been doing it because you didn't get your binky, but then your body learns it. And so now you do it every time you get hurt. Now you do it when you may be violated and not know why you just naturally quiet and suppress yourself. But it's that kind of muscle memory in our emotional world that we learn really, really young. And I think as parents, that's why it's so important to cultivate as best we can a lot of tools and a lot of patience, because we have, we're only now beginning to understand the effect that us just wanting our kids to be quiet actually has on them. And it's like, is it necessary? And now I forgot your original question. Oh, sacred rage. Okay. So the way that I look at sacred rage is like sometimes, especially in the last couple of years when I was really, really moving through so much of my personal work, like just deeply moving through my deepest wounds, it was setting a calendar alert to cry and setting a calendar alert to be pissed. And I'd be like, all right, can't get this out of me just yet. Okay. Gotta do this with my kid, doing this for work. in 2 weeks, I'm going to break a bunch of shit. You know, like I'm going to break some shit in 2 weeks. Like, and then honoring that and letting myself, you know, I think it can be really divine when you create a container where you can bring forward your pain and your anger when it's not triggered. Because then you're able to be with it in a different way.
Right.
You're able to be with it in a way that feels a lot more empowered and not reactive. And it's like, okay, what really hurts? Well, I know this happened to me and that has fed everything else. So let me sit with that. And then when you feel rage come up, being pissed, screaming, scream into pillows, make yourself cringe. You know, it's like, don't be above the mess of the process. Throw things as long as you're not going to harm another person or yourself. Go to, you know, they have rage rooms some places now. Like, you know, get a hammer and break some stuff, rip some stuff apart, you know, beat some stuff. Not a person, not yourself, you know, but as soon as you give yourself license to do that, sometimes all our body ever wanted to do was to feel it in the first place. So we can actually heal certain things that we didn't think we could with a lot more ease than we ever imagined, as long as we just commit to letting ourselves go there, and especially letting ourselves go there when we haven't been triggered into it by yet another thing that we're upset about. So, you know, when you get to a certain place where it feels safe to do this, with your journal, write down, what is your core curriculum? What are the patterns at play that you have been dealing with different people and at different times over and over and over again? You know, what was the original wound for that? And then sit with it and look at it and take the year to process it. You know, it's not something you have to fix your anger by this weekend. Take a year, take four seasons. You know, how are you going to relate to this anger as you get to go deeper after you've already healed a layer of it? Mm-hmm. Make time to cry. You know, like, it's release. There is nothing weak about it. Our bodies long to release stored energy. Mm-hmm. You can't do both. You can't try to intellectualize the work and read the books and just build knowledge and say, yep, and that happened to me, and now I know where that is. You have to bring it into a somatic element. You have to bring it into your body and release it from your body. They have to happen together for lasting change to occur in yourself and in your life.
That somatic healing is real as fuck. People bypass that and like think like they can intellectualize stuff. I like what you said so much about, I noticed that with my kid. It's like we train kids to like be quiet and not take up space and not embarrass us in public, but it's like we're domesticating them in a way that does make calcify their emotions. And it made me come into adulthood where I was just like non-reactive. Like I could literally feel myself making myself go numb because I felt feelings that were overwhelming. I didn't want to feel it. And that's a lot of like my adulthood. I started to feel like I fucking hate feeling. And I started to be like, why do I hate feeling so much? Yeah. And what happens is like when you suppress that, when you suppress the rage, which is healthy, because let's be honest, there are things that come up, you know, as women, as, you know, like in this fucked up world that should make you enraged. And if you continue to like just downplay that and downplay that, you will feel nothing. You'll feel numb and you won't be human. Humans are supposed to feel. And I've also realized recently, it's just like when you suppress the rage, you suppress the sadness, you have no choice but to also suppress the joy. Yes. When you start to overly regulate your feelings, your body is trained to not overly feel. And I was literally telling myself this, like, I'm not about to like cry, like that knot that stops it. Like there were feelings that I just actively was just pushing down because I didn't want anyone else to see me feel. And I didn't want to feel it because it felt triggering because I'm only reacting when something's, you know, making me react. But then when there was times where I'm feeling immense joy and happiness and safety, I felt like I could not express it and I could not embody it because, and I didn't know why. I'm like, I actually really am happy. But I'm just like, I felt like I was doing too much because I've already trained myself so much in doing too much emotionally. Like, you know, when you're a kid and they're like, you're tripping, you're not starving. You're, you know, like save those tears for something that really makes you cry. And so you start to like, you stop embodying any extreme feeling and then you can't you can't choose. You can't choose which feelings that you're numbing out because you've kind of just numbed out everything. There is your nervous system cannot regulate which emotions are which. It just knows that at a certain point you shut the fuck down. You freeze and that's it. And so it's taken me a lot to kind of undo that and really realize like it requires the voice to speak. It requires like, I'm pissed off. It requires that even to feel compassion for other people, because by doing that, you're not being compassionate with yourself. You're not being soft with yourself. And so it becomes hard to care about anybody else's feelings. Yeah. And so when I'm hearing you talk about the compassion and like just being self-aware, it's so true that I keep saying this, like I'm the compassion first has to begin with you, or else you won't even be able to identify when you're not being compassionate to somebody else because you're fucking numb. And I've done it, you know, like a lot. And it's and I'm happy you said the childhood thing, is because when you grow up in those, you know, most of us have, because most parents are taught to keep your kids in line, that you don't really have the tools in adulthood to feel or to speak or to rage or to like have extreme joy, and he almost feels guilty, you know, like this feels too good to be true or too safe, and it's difficult, you know. And I think more people have to hear that. It's like you have to move that energy in your body. Like you have to, you know, and like that's even sexually, it's even physical pleasure.
Yes.
You know,
that was just so powerfully said. So powerfully said. And like the piece about numbness, I think so many women confuse being numb with being the bigger person, being numb with being stoic. You know, it's like we can be like, oh, I'm above that.
Or strong. Or like there's this toxic positivity syndrome where it's like, I'm not going to feed into that. Like, I'm just so positive. It's like, no, but you're not positive. You're just not feeling shit. You're just numbed the fuck out, you know. And you're like, I'm happy, I'm good, everything's good. No, I'm fine. I'm fine. You know, I'm like, as women, we do that a lot because a lot is put on our plate. But it's like when you're not fine, you have to say you're not fine, or else you'll start to believe that you're fine, and then you won't even know when you're not. And I've done that. I've just been dead and like, I'm fine. Like, no, bitch, you're not. But you can't even recognize that you're not fine because you can't feel shit.
Yeah.
You know, because you're so used to saying everything's the fuck okay. And so someone disrespecting you or someone hurting you literally feels like nothing because you've trained yourself to not feel shit. To protect. And a lot of times it's a defense mechanism. But we have to find ourselves in safe places to disarm ourselves and regulate our nervous system so that we're not acting from a place of nothingness. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah. God, and we have to doing the work of the sacred rage, doing the work of feeling, makes space for the joy too. Because life is 100% always going to be teetering between grief and joy, 100% of the time. You don't do all this work and then arrive at your perfect life. Life changes, life transforms, but we're never going to not be disappointed by something. We're never going to not be kind of poked and prodded or somehow, you know, potentially injured by things that happen in the world, even if it's just observationally. So it's like making peace with the fact that, yes, this world is imperfect, but I'm going to let myself feel joy when it's present. Instead of being scared of it, I'm going to build my tolerance to it. Instead of being scared that like, no, I don't want to let myself get happy or excited because then it's going to go wrong or the other shoe is going to drop.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Shit is going to go wrong. Right. Let's be real. Like, yes, it is.
But anticipating that is not going to
feel the joy while it's there. Because be sure you're going to feel pain again. So feel the joy too, because that's what allows our life to be quote unquote balanced. That's where the harmony comes from. Don't commit to living in one extreme and not gift yourself the opportunity to feel the other move through your body.
Honestly, it's some powerful shit, and I'm sad it's taken me 35 years to fucking realize like, bitch, you can't numb yourself out. But
blessing. 35 years is nothing.
I know. I've been telling myself that lately. I'm like, sometimes I fuck up, then I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna look back at this shit 50 years at 50 and be like, bitch, you were 12.
Every ancestor went to their grave without these awarenesses or the opportunity.
Wow.
For this.
So how early? Like, we're just in time, like even more in time than we could ever think of.
And I'm thinking about sacred rage, and how we actually do this. I know. Retreats, you know, like I didn't have a term for it,
yeah.
But we have a practice that we do with our group where they are, we act like they actively, women need permission,
yes,
to do it. Like I actually have to show them that it's okay for you to scream. Like you can scream. Yeah. No one's coming for you.
How would they know otherwise?
Yeah. And it's so crazy the things that come up. And then at the end of it all, the space in your body that you have because you haven't given yourself this space. And it's so crazy. Randomly, this is a random moment I had the other night. I was masturbating and I had this like release and it was like this. I could feel energy passing through my body and my fingertips were numb and my feet. And I had to do this for like 5 minutes. I've never had anything like happen like that. And, and I use masturbation as ritual too. Like I use it manifesting. I use it for pissed off balance control. I use it whenever I'm horny, whatever, all the different things. But This one in particular, the reason I was using it was because I was on edge. And I was like, I have got to get out of my body and out of my head. Mm-hmm. Actually, I have to get into my body and out of my head. Mm-hmm. And when I did, I had this like, I felt like literal energy coming out. And it was like, I needed to like shake it. And it was something I'd never experienced before. And when it was finally out of me, it was like, oh, something left me.
Yeah.
Something, I made space for something.
And, okay, first of all, epic. Secondly, like, that's the part that I hope everyone takes away. The work is not as arduous and as grueling and as hard as we think it is when we're avoiding it. Because sometimes it really is as simple as let yourself feel all of it once.
Bitch, scream.
Once. It might even only take an hour. Mm-hmm. And then it's gone. And a lot of the times, it's gone for good. Mm-hmm. Like, it clicks out. And then if you do revisit whatever it is, you can revisit it in a neutrality. When you're in neutrality, it lets you be curious. When you're curious, you create new patterns within yourself that lead to lasting change.
Mm. You know, and I'm happy that you said that. Like, I realize we've spent a lot of time together. And we've spent all of our 30s together, and I'm not saying
like, I'm 27.
All of our 20s together, and deeply intertwined, deeply aligned, deeply as mirrors to each other. And I've really seen, and more than that, felt a lot of the changes and shifts that you've made, especially this year. And we have both for each other witnessed a lot of transformations and a lot of evolutions. And we've really assisted in that, even if we haven't realized it, the evolving of like the women that we are today. And today is your birthday. And I just want to remind you of like the woman that you've become in the last, you know, 6 years, 5 years that I've witnessed you grow into and like watch you embrace these ebbs and flows. And even when shit has been difficult and, you know, I've seen the grace that you've given others and yourself, and just to bear witness to the blossoming and the cocoon and the uncocooning of the woman that you are has been really, really, really beautiful. And I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
And I know this has been a tough year for you. And I know it's been an extremely successful year for you too. And I know it's been a lot of ups and downs. And I think that's difficult as women when we're experiencing really grand things alongside things that are like disheartening and sad. And I know it's a weird place to be sometimes, but it is your birthday, so woo! I got you a little surprise, and I just want to tell you that I love you so much.
I love you too.
And I'm very proud of you and the woman that you've become and that I've gotten to witness, and you witnessing yourself do the work and just being self-aware and saying, you know what, I'm going to let this go and I'm going to pick this up and I'm going to do this work, and just, you know, allowing yourself to do that has been very beautiful. So you just wait here. I'll be right back.
Thank you.
Happy birthday. I love you.
Thank you.
Yeah, you've had such an amazing year. Wow.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Erica. Happy birthday to you.
That was the white version, but.
Happy birthday to ya.
Come on.
Happy birthday to ya. Happy birthday.
Come on, Stevie. Come on. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, you hired Stevie?
I hired Stevie.
Oh, my God.
Thank you, my love.
I love you.
Thank you.
I wonder what the ritualistic candle means. I wonder, like, why do we blow out candles on a cake?
I know it's interesting because actually in ritual they say, you know, not to ever put out fire with your breath.
Yeah, they say to, like, put it with your fingers.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. I fucked it up.
No. Oh, my God. No.
I'm just kidding.
I wonder.
You know what I just found out recently from one of my my amazing teachers in Vedic philosophy and astrology. He was sharing that there are Vedic mantras that you use before prayer that are specifically prayers about how you're going to get it wrong. So it's like, if I mispronounce any words, if I do any part of this ritual incorrectly, please forgive me in advance and take my intention so that it's done correctly. And so, like, yeah, so you're fine.
Okay, cool. I meant it with all the best intentions. So thank you.
You're welcome, my love. I'm very happy to spend this birthday with you for another year.
Thank you. Debbie, do you have an affirmation for us? Maybe, or for me?
Yes,
I
do.
Maybe an affirmation for me? My birthday affirmation?
I'm really excited to share this affirmation with you because it has created miraculous energy in my life. It's, like, shifted so much. And I say it especially anytime I'm in a crowded space or I need help or really to start my day. But I created this affirmation a couple years ago, and it is, I accept. No, start over. I attract, experience, and receive the highest version of every being whom I encounter.
I attract, experience, and receive the highest version of every being I encounter.
Yeah. The way that that's worked in my life is, you know, when you do the work, right, we still live in a world of everyone else who may not have, or people at different places in their process. And I found that, one, that affirmation extends a lot of grace from my heart outwardly for people in their process. But it also has miraculously kind of transformed my experiences that I don't know who the person may be to anybody else or who they are the rest of their day. But when they're in front of me, I'm always experiencing the best of who that person can be. Mm. And I've used that at airports, like literally where there's 200 people stranded standing outside. And I'm like,
she done cursed everyone else out. But when she got to you, she was kind.
Literally, like, you know what? Come on, I'm going to take you the secret way. Let's go. So, like, I started having all those kind of experiences. So it's worked beautifully in my life. I think it helps us really open our hearts to the belief that there can be good outcomes, even in the most stressful environments.
I commend that because, as you know, as we do the work, it becomes much more challenging to experience people who haven't or not aware, or, you know, it's just, it becomes more challenging. And then you're like, what the fuck, God? And then you can go into that realm where you're like, I'm above all this shit, including all you. You know, like, yeah. It's easy to go into ego when you experience people. Yes. Yeah. To separate yourself. But the truth is, we're all human and we're all like mirrors to each other. And we're all different versions of ourselves at different times. And like, it gives you, you know, you have to have compassion for people who are just like ignorant in their bliss in their ignorance. And, you know, sometimes that's for the safety of everyone, but also just preparing yourself to know and give compassion for experiencing people who are not the same place that you are. And then feeling okay with having that discriminative awareness to allow those people to flow out and know that, like, that's energy that you cannot hold on to and that you cannot keep, and that your purpose is so much bigger in this life, or your purpose is this and that purpose and that lesson is that. And in order for you to fulfill your purpose, you have to release those people, and not in a negative or I'm higher or better than you way, but just for me to do what I need to do, I gotta exit left.
Hell yes. Ooh wee.
Well, before we get out of here, because I know you gotta go, you pulled the nine of swords.
Upside down. That's reverse. Nine of swords.
So I don't, do you want to speak to this, how this translates to you? Or I can just read it.
Okay. All right. Ready? Well, let's not, I don't, I don't know if this was a card for me personally or if it's for the collective.
Okay, could be so, for the collective. Either, yeah.
I don't know whether I'll accept and receive this or not.
You don't have to.
Okay, so reversed, inner turmoil, deep-seated fears, secrets, releasing worry. So the Nine of Swords reverse shows that you are experiencing deep inner turmoil as a result of your mindset. Your negative thoughts are taking you in a downward spiral of despair and anxiety that contradicts reality. You are making things feel much worse than they really are. You may try to keep your worries private and personal to you, but if you are struggling to keep your head above water, it may now be time to confide in others and seek their help and support. Others will offer you a new perspective or even just a place to vent that will ease some of the stress and tension. The reverse Nine of Swords can also point out that you are incredibly hard on yourself, putting yourself down or engaging in negative self-talk. So when the Nine of Swords reversed appears in a reading, ask yourself, why are you so hard on yourself? How are you putting yourself down, and what is the source of your depression? What can you do to make yourself feel better? On a more positive note, the Nine of Swords reverse can show that you have already worked through this period of worry and depression and are making a recovery. You may have come to a realization that things are not as bad as you made them out to be, and you are beginning to relax and calm yourself about what was once a terrifying situation.
Hmm. That doesn't feel resonant for me. I think if I think of turmoil, something I shared with you before we walked in here is my travel schedule for work is nuts. And so definitely today I was in a lot of stress of like, wow, you're going to be gone most of November. Okay. And then how do we do this? And just kind of thinking about the process of being a mom and doing that much. But yeah, I feel really in my life and in my process, I feel clearer than I've ever felt. And I feel more in acceptance of, in grace with, and in flow with my life than I think I've ever been.
Beautiful. Well, maybe this card, if it's not for you, but maybe the message could be about is that yeah. It's not going to be as bad as you think. It's going to be good. It's going to be easeful. Baby boy is going to be taken care of just fine. And you're going to go through, have amazing encounters with people and experiences in your travels that are going to be really necessary to keep you in flow of what you're doing.
Always.
So...
thank you.
Well, Devi, it's always wonderful to have you on. If you guys haven't listened to Devi's episode, we have an episode we did, I think, like almost 2 years ago. It was called Healing Your Inner Child.
Yeah, we have one almost 2 years ago with Devi, and then we're on her show last week.
Yes,
so go check us out.
Yes. Oh, yeah,
go check us out over there. Devi's always dropping the spiritual gems. I love you. I'm always grateful to see you and get to converse, so I appreciate you very much.
So where can our people find you?
Thank you both so much. It is always like just such a privilege and truly such a joy to be in community with both of you and just like be in this flow of our unique journey as women and as enlightened beings and as moms. You know, just like everything we spoke to on the show today was just so deep. And it's just, I'm so glad we dove into like all the nuance of what it is to do the work and where you find the pains and how you let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone can, I always say, just connect with me on Instagram and click the link in bio. It'll link you to my website. I'm the voice of daily meditation on the Chopra app, so you can meditate with me 365 days a year. I have a few hundred meditations I've done on there. And my podcast is called Deeply Well. It's all about conversations in higher consciousness and self-care. And I have a book, Crystal Bliss. I have a couple announcements coming in the coming weeks. But yeah, at Devi Brown on my IG. And click the link in the bio.
So make sure you check out Devi. And if you haven't already, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you're watching right now, just click that subscribe button. And
happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Be safe.
Put up your ancestor altars.
And send us your costumes.
Oh, yeah. We love costumes. We're the Halloween queens.
Bye.
Bye.